Hey, welcome back to The Sound Table. I'm your host, Austin, and I'm joined by our co-host, Miranda.
Hello.
And today we are here to talk a little bit about the sentiment of those who can't do teach. I saw a big conversation going on in our Facebook group where somebody asked, what do you think about the saying, people who can't do teach? I think it's something that we've all heard a billion times. It's something that I think there is like a little bit of truth in that we'll talk about, but spoiler alert, if you don't feel like listening to an hour-long podcast, I don't agree with that statement. So if that's all you wanted to hear, you can go ahead and click off. So let's just go ahead and dive straight into the topic. Do you agree with the sentence, those who can't do, teach? And if you do agree, why? And if you don't agree, why? Or do you think it falls somewhere in the middle? I'll let you weigh in first, because I'm very obviously biased.
I don't think you're biased.
I literally went to school to teach. And I have a YouTube channel where we do videos every week.
Yeah, but you don't just do that. You also have clients and everything like that. So that's not really true. But there are a lot of people, I guess, who are on YouTube who might not. I'm not sure. Like people who teach on YouTube who maybe don't
have
that many. I don't know if that's even true. How would you even know that? But anyway, I don't agree with that statement either. I mean, there's obviously a little bit of truth in it because there's a little bit of truth in every statement you can say. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's true. I think that like when I first started hearing that statement, it was said about like PE teachers.
Sure.
Because most PE teachers are obviously a little, well, not most, not all of them, but a lot of them are sporty. So they're like, oh, they couldn't make it in their sport. So now they're a PE teacher.
People were like tore their ACL in college playing.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that was my pro days.
Yeah,
now I'll just
like,
teach.
Now they can't do it. So now they have to teach. And it's like, oh, that's kind of rude.
Right. I feel like, for me, that sentence feels more harmful than correct because I just think that there's a lot of people who might have talent or might have the skill set of whatever they're teaching, whether it's math or linguistics or music production or baseball. But like maybe they don't have one of the components that it would take to like make that an entire career. I think off the camera earlier, you even said, people really only say this about fields that it feels
like really hard to be
really hard to break into. Like nobody looks at a math teacher and they're like, oh, you teach algebra instead of working at NASA. I don't think that you actually know
exactly
trigonometry.
Exactly. But they say it about like PE teachers where it's like, you know how hard it is to be a professional athlete.
Right.
Like that's like 1% of
music
people.
Teachers.
Yes. It's like, it's a really hard job to get into in general. I also just want to say, I think teaching is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
In anything. I think you have to have so much patience and you have to have a lot of knowledge, not to mention a lot of people can have knowledge, but they have no clue how to transfer that knowledge to other people. That in itself is a skill that, yes, you can teach people how to do it, but I think some people are just natural born teachers.
For sure.
And I think that's really hard to do. And I think people really kind of use that, those who can't do teach as like a dig. But I'm like, I think teaching is not easy.
Yeah. On that Facebook thread that I'm talking about, I think my leading point of that whole response, and by the way, everybody was agreeing. I'm not like making this podcast to like continue arguing with people. Everybody in this post was in pretty much agreement that that's a bullshit statement. But in my opening point of that statement, I basically was like, I've never heard that sentiment from a single person whose opinion like I would respect or be bothered by. And it's funny because I've had people definitely throw shade at me for having the YouTube channel and for selling courses and for having a podcast. And it's one of those things that you might see me on YouTube every week. And because I haven't worked on a big number one or top 10 record, you might be
not
like,
yet.
Who is this guy? Why is he teaching?
Yeah.
But what you might not understand is I was producing full time before I started making tutorials. And when I started making tutorials, I was very honest about where I was in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm going to show you what I'm doing. If you want to follow along, that's fine. And if you don't, that's fine. And over the years, as I've gotten better, our content has gotten better. And as I've gotten better, I'm working on bigger and bigger records. And so it starts to give people this idea that like the legitimacy is building up, but it's just as legitimate now that it was you know, 5 years ago in 2019 or whatever, 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the big like fucked up part of that sentiment is like, I'm never hearing it from people who I would be like crushed if that was their opinion of me.
Right.
Like all of my favorite producers that I've ever spoken to have found me through Make Pop Music or through projects that I've produced, and they all love it. Like people who probably don't need to learn anything from me. Love our content. We literally just had a huge producer yesterday follow us from a reel that we made.
Yeah.
And he does not need my tips. He doesn't need my tricks. But it shows me that he doesn't think less of me because I choose to educate people online.
No, I think it's opposite. I think people who are been in this field for a long time, a lot of those people are not like, well, I've done it this way my entire career and that's the way I always do it. Those people are most of the time always looking to learn and to grow. And I think a way to learn and to grow is to look at people who are doing it differently than you or who are younger than you, who are like, cause let's be real. Like you're all, a lot of your stuff, you have a lot of gear now, but a lot of it started out as like, what do you call it? In the box.
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, I could make the same record that I would make in this studio with $100,000 of gear sitting by my pool and headphones on a laptop.
Yeah.
Like I could still make the same record.
Yeah. And like a lot of older producers, that's not how they produce. So I think it's cool. Probably they probably learn stuff from someone like you and other YouTubers who do tutorials like that. I think they can learn stuff because it's not how they would normally do things.
Yeah. That's a big thing that I've always said when people talk about this is like, I'm nowhere near the top of echelon of producers. Like, I think I'm very skilled and talented, and I work with a lot of people who also think that, and a lot of people that would be like a mentor to me also think that. However, I know that I don't know everything.
Right.
But I know that I know a lot more than a lot of people, but that doesn't dismiss if somebody who's never had a big record but has this really cool sound design tip on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to listen to you because you don't have 100 million streams. Like, that's such a fucked up,
or like, you don't
stupid
have,
attitude to have.
Yeah, you don't have like a certain amount of followers. It's like, if it's a good tip, it's a good tip. Why does it matter who it's coming from? Because sure, that person might not have the experience that you have or that someone that you normally follow has, but that doesn't mean that they don't know something and they're not like looking at something in a different light than you might traditionally look in it.
Isn't that like the beauty of life and art is like taking things from all walks of life? Like, do you not think it would be boring to just learn from people who only work in big studios with millions of dollars of gear on $200,000 monitors? Like, I'm sorry, I like watching a mix with the masters as much as anybody else, but at the end of the day, they're in this multi-million dollar facility in France. And while I love watching how Elangelo made a Post Malone song, nothing in that studio is relatable to me.
Right.
I get the benefits of seeing the plugins that he uses and the techniques that he uses and the mindset, but that could easily be done by somebody who is not Elangelo, who's in Tulsa, you know, like that's what's cool about where the music industry has kind of gotten. And I think that there's so many people that just have that like fucked up mindset of like, if you're not objectively better than me, I'll never, ever listen to anything that you say.
Yeah. Not to be rude, but I feel like those people who are like that aren't that good.
They're never good.
Like, if your mindset is that, like, you're determining who's worthy of
teaching. Yeah.
And, like, you think that you're too good to, like, further your education or further learning new skills or new tips or tricks or whatever, you're kind of, that's kind of shitty.
Like, I got kind of a little bit cocky in my response to that because I was like, I've literally never heard that sentiment from somebody who could A, make a better record than me, or B, teach better than me, and C, much less do both at the same time than me.
Exactly.
So anybody who I think produces better than me loves our content. Anybody that I think teaches better than me loves our content. Anybody who's in my DMs talking about how we shouldn't be making tutorials because I'm not a Billboard charting producer is a fucking lowlife. Like, I don't care. I'm not really worried about their opinion because they haven't done anything that I respect. I don't think that they do good quality work. Every time I get a comment like that, I look them up, can't find anything on them. If I find something on them, it sounds like garbage every single time.
Yeah, I mean, not even just that, but it's just a shitty opinion to have.
It's a dumb attitude.
So it's like, I don't care if someone had that opinion and they did have all this amazing credit. It's like, you're clearly a shitty person if that is the mindset you have.
The thing is, they almost never will because
no,
you can't get far in the industry with that kind of attitude. People see through that immediately.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it on the podcast before. One of the biggest things to getting bigger credits, I'm realizing, is just being a good hang, being in a session and not being a fucking bummer to be around, or not being an asshole to people, or not missing deadlines, or not being a snarky know-it-all. And like, the people who I see bitching online about that kind of stuff all the time are the people that I'm like, I'm not worried about you. You're never going to have a successful career because you have a terrible attitude. And even if you had the raw talent, which 99% of the time they don't, the attitude is horrible.
I think it correlates. I think if you got a bad attitude, it's just, you know, how are you ever going to be good? Like, if you're so negative, how are you ever going to further yourself and be good at what you do?
Right.
Because you're just an asshole and you're just surrounding yourself with negativity.
And like, I understand that a lot of people have reservations about, especially people who teach audio, because we have come to this day and age where like everybody tries to have a masterclass. Everybody tries to produce content and like position themselves as an expert. And I always break it down into, there's people who are very, very, very technically skilled that can't teach for shit. So even though they can make the best sounding record in the world, they'll never help anybody else make that because they don't know how to relay that information, because in their brain, it just happens and they can't make sense of it. They just do it.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who might not have the production chops or the creative skill or even really the taste to mix a great record or make a great record, but they can give you all of the detail that you need to know about how a compressor works or how a song is written in rhyme scheme or the type of guitar that was used. And just because they might not have the sauce to make an actual record that I'd want to listen to, I can still take those tips. I think this is what people forget, is like, you have to become a good learner. Like, there's so much information in the world. It's your job to start vetting out what's good information, what's bad information, what's going to work for you, what's complete bullshit that you should disregard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that gets hard when there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people on YouTube trying to tell you how to mix a vocal, especially when some of those people can't mix good, don't have any credits, and are not very good at teaching even basic fundamentals. But you don't get to write everybody off because some people have taken advantage of the social media game and are trying to position themselves as experts. At the end of the day, my philosophy when it comes to teaching or educating or making a course, just be honest about where you are. I have an issue with people trying to like position themselves as an expert and try to flash all these credits that they were like barely an assistant or a runner on, like they made the fucking song. And they try to have these $1,000 masterclasses where they're really trying to like bait people into buying them. And they don't have the technical skill. They're not good teachers. They really can't offer value and they overpromise everything.
Yeah.
I hate the courses that are like, I'm going to show you how to make $200,000 as a producer, or I'm going to show you how to make a radio ready record. Like, if you've never done that, you don't get to say that.
Yeah.
And that's where my kind of hard line draws. Anybody can make content. You just have to be honest about who you are, what you've actually done, to the extent of how you've actually done it, and just let people know. Even on the YouTube channel, I'll never sit there and try to tell people, hey, this is how you make a song that's going to end up number one on the Billboard charts.
Right.
I've never done it. So right. I don't get to teach that. I don't get to say that.
Yeah. It's also extra icky if you're like taking people's money on these promises that you probably can't keep.
Yes. Yeah, false advertising.
Yeah. Like, that's the problem with courses, is that so many of these, like, I don't know, what do you call them? Like bros on Instagram.
Like clickbaity.
Yeah. They all like,
sales funnily.
Yeah, it's just gross. They're all taking this idea of a course and then they're making it like illegitimate and like not actually being beneficial to anyone. They're just wanting to like legitimately make money really quickly, which sucks, because then people like us who actually do sell legitimate courses that are actually beneficial.
Have to break through that noise.
Yeah, like we had, and like I understand people's reservations for even buying
100%
our courses, because it's like, there's so many out there that are so scammy and sketchy and not useful at all. And it's like the shittiest quality. And someone's like filming in their phone, like on their phone in their car. And it's like, yeah, I understand why people are sketchy to that, because you don't want to take your hard earned money, especially in this economy, and spend it on something that's going to be trash when, like, honestly, a lot of it is trash.
Yeah. Or their entire courses that, even if they're good production value, are teaching basic things that anybody should know, or they're like teaching hypotheticals. Like so many of those courses that I see, they're teaching hypotheticals of how to get 1 million streams. I'm like, you haven't done that proven time and time and time again. Like maybe you helped one artist get to 1 million streams once, but for that one artist, how many did you have that paid you these thousands of dollars that still only got 20,000 streams?
Right.
And like, I've always been worried about that with making a course. And that's why, to be honest, the courses that we do have seem really interesting if you're actually interested in learning my production methods, but are very like unsexy and unflattering and unshiny to people who see all of these like super high produced Instagram ad courses that have all these crazy promises of like, I can get you making productions that'll get you in the room with Dua Lipa and that will make you $200,000, because people might not know how bullshit those are. And then they see our course where we don't have any of those promises. And it's just like, hey, I'm going to show you everything that I do. I'm going to explain it as I do it. And like, it's up to you to figure out how to utilize that information. I can teach you, but I can't make your record for you. And when we market it very honestly it makes it seem so much less like eye popping than somebody who's just like, this is the fucking producer's guide to becoming a big, big hit producer.
Yeah, and you're going to be a millionaire after you watch this course. It's like,
and like,
the
could
hell
we hire a copywriter and market our shit like that and position it like that? Yeah.
Oh, it's not that hard. It's all shit. You could do it yourself.
So unethical to me.
Oh, it's super unethical. That is one thing.
I also think it doesn't have staying power. Like,
oh, no,
we've been
doesn't.
Doing make pop music for 5 years and we've made very consistent money. And every year we make more and more money. I see those people that do that. And yeah, they might have a course that makes them $1 million, but they burn out real quick.
Yeah. And my thing is like, integrity is something that you can never buy. You can't buy people's trust and you can't buy your own integrity. And you are immediately like burning that to the ground when you do shit like that. And you sell these snake oily courses that are scammy and sketchy and weird. It's like, no, absolutely never. We will never do that. I promise you guys.
I think too, that people forget that, like, I love our YouTube channel. I love teaching courses. I went to school to literally educate. Like, I went to school to be a teacher for English. However, I am much more worried about actually making music. If you told me, Austin, on Friday, you can either film a YouTube video or you can go sit in a session with XYZ artist that you've always wanted to work with, I'm picking the artist. Even though I might not make any money from it, the song may never come out. I like to create music first and foremost. I'm always going to try to stick to our schedule, and we're very, very diligent about that. However, if I had to pick one or the other, it's making music. I'm sorry.
I think that's why people like you, because you actually feel the genuine passion behind what you do. You're not just someone who's like, oh, this is like a quick way to like make a buck, even though you don't make hardly anything on YouTube unless you have like millions and millions of views. You're not making like a lot of money. But
we make like maybe $1,200 a month off of our YouTube
which
ad
is
revenue.
Hey, not complaining, but like,
but for 200,000 subscribers, it's like,
yeah. You can't you can't really live on that in this day and age. But I forgot what the heck I was going to say.
That the immediate money of like scamming people is not worth the long term benefits of having a career.
Yeah, it's totally not.
I think a good example of me making the music first and then figuring out how to highlight what I'm doing in content is actually from an argument that I had this morning with somebody in our comment section that was like, we did a video on like how to get cool ad libs on a song, right? And so for that video, I used a song that I just made. Like, sometimes we make songs specifically for videos.
A
and
lot
when we
of
do
the
that,
time you do.
I am very cognizant of like, I'm going to try to use tools that people can utilize or people have or whatever. Sometimes we're taking music that I just made and I'm going to highlight what I did. And to me, those are my favorites because those are songs that are actually out in the world or whatever.
Yeah.
Or they're things that I just made, not thinking about content. I just made them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's pluses and minuses of both. In this video, on one of the ad libs, I was using the Help Me Devon Rosetta EQ. And the comment was like, why are you using the Rosetta EQ when you could use something like Pro Q3? Nobody has a Rosetta EQ and everybody has FabFilter. So why wouldn't you use that so we can follow along? And I was like, I'm not going to dumb down my techniques and not use the tools at my disposal so everybody in the world can follow along with a plugin that they may or may not have. Like at the end of the day, I'm still teaching the technique. You need to be able to apply, oh, he's boosting something called air on that. I know what air is. It's like super top end. Let me just do that in Pro-Q or a stock EQ or a Mog EQ or whatever. And I was like, I'm not going to dumb down my techniques to only utilize one plugin when I have a whole tool of arsenals. And they were like, are you just trying to flex how many plugins that you have? And I was like, no, I'm telling you that I made the song and I used the tool that I thought was necessary. And I showed you that instead of me faking it and doing something that I think fits a record and then dumbing it down for YouTube. I think that that's so ungenuine. And
also,
like,
you like what you like. Who freaking cares?
Also, that Rosetta, you could like under $100. And sometimes I like highlighting small companies. Help Me Devon's great. His plugins are awesome.
Yeah.
And I wanted to utilize it in that video. I wanted to use it in that mix. So I did. I'm not going to apologize for the tools that I use when I'm making music, because at the end of the day,
people are so crazy.
I'm a producer first and a content creator second.
Like, yeah. People forget that though.
I am not going to just sit there. We've done videos on how to mix a song with stock EQ.
Yeah.
We've done literal Cubase projects for Steinberg using all stock stuff. And that's great. There's always a world where that's great content because anybody can follow along. At the end of the day, there's other creators that do that as well.
I was just going to say, are there not 100 videos
on
YouTube?
There are not 100 other people that can show people how I want to make a record with the tools that I have. And
people complain about the weirdest things, you guys. You would not believe the things that people complain about. People are so entitled to things, and it blows my mind. And like, I think people just, again, back to, we've said this before in a podcast episode, so sorry if I sound like a broken record, but I think they forget that you're like a real human being who's like actually not like,
they think we're just like a company that scripts out a video.
Yeah, or they just think you like sit here all day until you need to film a video, and then you turn on the camera, and then all of a sudden that is the only part of the, like, that's the only part of you that exists, because that's the only part that they see. Yeah. And it's like, nope, you're a real person, a real producer who like does their job outside of creating content and is not always thinking in the back of your mind, which you shouldn't be thinking, okay, well, what if I need to make a video of this song? What do I need to do? Like, no, you need to be just creating freely and flow in, like, you know, your flow state of creating.
I'll be totally like, honest. If we wanted to really maximize our content and maximize NPM's reach and maximize the 300,000 people that have eyes on us, we could easily run this much more like a business where all of our content is super scripted. We have many more brand deals. I make things specific for content and basically don't make music on the side.
How miserable would that be?
That's not fulfilling to me. That's not what I want to do. Some people, that is what they want to do. They're content creators first, and that is totally fine.
Totally, yeah.
But I'm not that. I've never been that. And if that's what you want our channel to be, go watch somebody else.
Yeah.
I think that our channel is valuable because I show what I'm doing and because I'm just a normal person. Like, this studio that we're in is just a 13 by 13 or 14 by 14 bedroom. Like, anybody could work in a space like this.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you might not have all this gear, but as we said earlier, you don't really have to. I could make the same record more or less with stock plugins in Mexico. Like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I just get really irritated when people treat us like we're this like big conglomerate that's trying to like figure out a way to like sell things or do things or like dumb things down for the masses.
We're
like, that's not interesting
to me.
These two
people right here.
Yeah, it's just not like making content would be so fucking boring and miserable that I would make a few videos a year and that would be it. You would not get weekly content, I promise you.
Yeah. Also, every content creator that I watch is creating content that they enjoy. They're doing it. It's all like them doing stuff because they like it and them being genuine in what they're creating. And to me, you can so easily see that when you're watching people's content. Like, you can tell when someone's disingenuous, in my opinion. And so I'm like, I like watching people who are just doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
Why would you want someone to create this like false character and then be this like robot of a person on camera? Like, I just don't get it. And even in our videos, like, your personality is not even like shining through in the tutorials because you are trying to cram like an hour's worth of content in like 30 minutes or less.
Which is still too long for a YouTube video. Like, everybody is like, oh, could you do like a 15 minute tutorial or what? And I'm like, I can't give the information that I need to in 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's a yapper, a certified yapper.
Yeah,
but
literally.
It is beneficial. You just like to...
I'm just thorough.
Yeah, oh, I was going to say over-explain, but that sounds like a little negative. Yeah, you're very thorough. You don't want...
Or just cram too many ideas into one video because I want the value to be there. If somebody clicks on the video and they see that it's long, I want to give them enough value where they're not like, yeah, it was 30 minutes, but like, Jesus Christ, that could have been 14 minutes.
Yes,
like,
yes.
It better be jam-packed.
Yes, I was going to say, that is a thing, is that a lot of the time I'll see people that'll watch the video and then they'll come back later to finish it. I think because it's like so much information. They're like, oh shit, hold on. Okay. Let me watch like 15 minutes of this and then I can come back and like maybe apply the rest of the stuff that I'm trying to learn a little bit later, because it is a lot. But how do we even get here from those?
We're just talking about people who make content and teach. Because we were talking about people that just do it the wrong way. And like, I guess what I'm saying is like, what that person wanted is the exact type of content creator I don't really love. Like, people who just teach hypotheticals and don't teach real world shit. Like, I don't want to take a technique that I would do with one tool and then find a totally different tool that I wouldn't use that for, just to say that that's how you do it. Like,
well, then is that not like, some people get annoyed when we do sponsored content, even if the sponsored content is like something that you always use, and then people will still like get annoyed with it. And it's like, okay, I would have used this no matter what. So it's not like
all of our sponsors. I will not take sponsorships from companies that I don't like the ethos of the company, I don't like the people that run the company, and that I don't actively purchase and use their gear.
Yeah.
I've done sponsors for Slate Digital, Auto Tune, Baby Audio. I still pay for my monthly subscriptions. Yeah. They gave me basically a lifetime of free stuff, but I like it so much and I stand by it so much that I have no problem paying the $15 a month.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's just honesty and integrity.
Yeah. And you would be shocked how many sponsorship videos that he turns down. Like
probably
90% of
between
them.
$10,000 and $15,000 a month worth of sponsored videos.
Yeah, like most of them are turned down.
We do like one sponsored video every... We've done actually a couple recently, but that's just because everybody's releasing right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But normally, like maybe five or six a year. But we could do one every week if we wanted.
Yeah, but all of that to say that people get mad at those sponsored videos when you're using this tool that you already use. But then if you made a video using a tool that you don't normally use, then people would get mad at that and be like, well, why are you using that? You don't normally use that tool. So it's like, what the
hell?
Or they
just assume that it's some under the table sponsorship
that I'm
not mentioning.
Or it's like a sketchy sponsorship, which is completely illegal and we would never do as well. But yeah, it's like, what do you want? You just can't. I think people like that are just like a little negative Nancys. It's like, yeah. You can't really win in that situation because what do you, like if you would have used the ProQ tool, they would have complained about that too. So
they're like, why do you always use the same fucking EQ?
Exactly. Are they sponsoring you? Literally, someone thought that he was sponsored by Stanley, the freaking cup company, because he had a cup in the background.
This one?
Yeah. It was because it was sitting in the background, out of focus, might I add. So you can't even tell it's a Stanley cup. It could have been an off brand. I'm like, what? Who do you think we are? Why would Stanley pay for that?
I think that a lot of this does stem from like the base question of like, do people respect educators? Like,
yeah, I think it, the problem is that educators and content creators, the line is so blurry.
Yeah.
Like you are a content creator, but you are more of an educator, but people don't see it that way because it is content at the end of the day.
Right.
And a lot of content creators are not so ethical sometimes. Like not a lot, I shouldn't say that, but you know, some are not.
The amount of money we could make if I just threw our ethics to the wind and took every fucking sponsorship.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Took every product placement and just pumped out every product idea that I could think of.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I promise you we could make $1 million a year easily.
Yeah, but for what?
It's not worth it to me. Like,
no.
I think what a lot of people forget is, like, that might be fine for people that just run a content creation business. But like I said earlier in the podcast, at the end of the day, I want to make big records. Like, I don't want to ostracize myself from the audio community, from people who could be great mentors or really good contacts, because I'm a piece of shit online. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that the people that I get to talk to now would be in my DMs if I was just another scammy, clickbaity ass, no value, high profit creator. And like, that's not the career I want to have. I don't care about the money. Like, we're fine. We live very comfortably. But if we didn't, I would just focus more time on creating and make more music, and you'd have a marketing job, and like, it's fine. Like, I like making content for Make Pop Music, but like, we don't have to.
Yeah.
I do it because I enjoy it. Even if I was producing a top 10 record, I'd still make a tutorial about that record. However, if I got to the point where I was making so many gigantic records that I had to take a hiatus, I would just be honest and be like, hey guys, I'm still going to come back and make content when I have time, but these are the opportunities that my life has given me, and this is what I feel like my mission is. And I love making the content, but then at the end of the day, I want to make records more. So
yeah. We also have an actual business outside of YouTube. So it's like, that is also a reason that we say we have integrity and stay ethical because that's just the people that we are.
Right.
But it's also, we do also have a business that we care about, and you have to be, and to have a long-term business, you have to be a ethical business owner in that way and not take advantage of people or sell people pipe dreams or whatever.
I just don't want to be a bad vibe in the industry. Like, there's too many of those already.
Yeah, really, exactly. And it's just like an icky, it's just like, oh, how could you sleep at night? I just don't know.
It's also funny to me because like, that saying has been around forever, and I actually feel like it's less true now than ever, because with things like Mixed with the Masters, or with like the Waves Masterclasses, or the Slate Digital Masterclasses that they do, or Masterclass even, or just people live streaming. Like, some of the people that make the biggest records in the world are live streaming. You can go on Twitch and see Disclosure or Ian Kirkpatrick or Lofile. You can go on Masterclass and see Elangelo and Leslie Braithwaite and like all of these crazy, crazy people.
I just thought of a perfect example.
Bit it out.
Are you sure you don't? Are you done with your sentence?
Talk your shit, baby.
Okay. No, I was going to say how we were saying, like, it's actually really hard to teach.
Yeah.
I think a perfect example of that is when Charlie Puth did his masterclass or whatever he, whoever he partnered with.
Yeah.
And everyone was super disappointed. Yeah.
Studio maybe now.
I have
it's
no clue.
One or the other.
But people were very disappointed with it. And they were like, what is this? But everyone, a lot of people love his productions. And it's like, it just shows that he might be an amazing producer, but he might be a shit teacher. Because it is not easy to show your process, show what you do, especially when a lot of it is up here. It's really hard to put that on paper. Like, it might be a little easier to like show somebody how to do like a math problem. That's like, there's only one way normally to get there.
Right.
Maybe two ways to get there. But with something like that's creative, that's kind of hard to show.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect example of someone that like, they might be talented and have the skill set, but they do not have the skill set to teach because it's not easy.
And like some people got value out of that course.
Oh,
some
I'm
people
sure,
got inspired
I'm sure.
And like they did the mentorship thing where you join the group and submit your songs for feedback. And like, that's great.
Yeah.
If you purchase that, I hope that you got your value's worth. A lot of people were like,
I just saw a lot of people complaining about
basic
it.
Stuff that I feel like I could have learned anywhere. And like, there were production issues. Like
yes.
The audio was like a microphone in the room that was mono for yeah. half of the course. And like, if I did that on YouTube, I'd get fucking castrated, much less if people paid $200 or $300 for
it. Yeah.
And so like, that is a great example of how just because a big company is getting a big creator on there to do a course, like it might not be the highest value.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, like I was reading the Rick Rubin book when we were in Mexico. And Rick Rubin is definitely a character in the industry that has opinions on both sides of the spectrum. A lot of people think he's an icon and he's a great addition to music. And a lot of people are like, I don't get it. He's just like a vibe curator. I kind of fall somewhere in the middle where I do think that he's been behind a lot of great records.
Mm-hmm.
I was having this talk with Adam Sliger, who he has a YouTube channel. If you haven't checked it out, he just did a video that was great, but go check him out. He lives in Orlando though. And we were chatting the other day when he was dropping something off about Rick Rubin. And he was like, when I read that book, all I could think of is like, this job doesn't fucking exist in studios anymore. Like
yeah.
If I have somebody go to a studio to sit there and tell people like that's good or that's bad, they're going to be like, why are you here?
Well, isn't that kind of what DJ Khaled does?
Well, he's more of a producer. So he'll be like, do this on the record.
Oh, but
do this
he
on the
just
record.
Doesn't know how to do it. Or maybe, I think he, maybe does, he does,
but like,
he just
it's just, it's more like he's like steering the ship through a person.
Got
where
it.
Rick Rubin is legitimately just like, he says himself, he's like, I don't know anything about technical stuff. I don't know anything about music theory. I don't know how a compressor works. I don't know how a mixing board works. I just sit there and say it's good or it's bad. And like, I'm not saying that that's not valid, but Adam was saying, he was like, how do you get to be Rick Rubin in a world where big studios like that don't really exist anymore? Like, you would never get into the rooms to have an opinion like that.
Yeah, nowadays,
and
yeah.
So what is the value in somebody like that trying to teach? And so in his book, when I was reading it, a lot of people responded on NPM when I posted a story and they were like, this book is great. He's the GOAT. He's a legend. I love this book so much. And all I could think when I was reading it was like, it's a fun beach read. It is inspiring. Like, it did make me want to not be so methodical when I create and just kind of let what happens happens and like invite creativity into my daily life rather than trying to like manufacture creativity.
I was going to say, isn't it a book more on creativity than music though?
Yeah, but like, yeah. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be like a Rick Rubin masterclass on like how to make a record, like how to harness your creativity to make a gigantic record.
Can't really teach that.
And like, you can't. And like, at the end of the day, to me, I was like, this book is great inspiration and it's a good reminder to like unplug a little bit, get more hands on, let my mind kind of wander and get weird with shit.
Yeah.
But like, there was nothing groundbreaking in that book for me. And that's fine. I think a lot of people have issues with it kind of being positioned as like this big tell all of Rick Rubin's career, where like even in the book, I think that there were situations where if he would have just like said the artist or like gave a really specific detail, it would have been much more applicable. But he'll be like, oh, I was in a session with an artist that I can't name and I told them to change this chord and then it became one of the biggest hits in the world. And it's like, I need a little bit more info from that story. Like, that's not doing much to me. Number one, I don't even know if that actually happened. Number two,
you don't know that. Any of you, even if you named the artist, you wouldn't know if that actually happened, technically.
Yeah, but at least I can imagine it. Where this, I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah, well, I mean, he might have signed NDAs in his defense.
But a great example about somebody who has the craziest credits in the music industry. Can't teach what he knows. He'll never be able to teach anybody his taste. Like, that is what he's known for, is like his taste.
He's more of a tastemaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion, Rick Rubin would thrive as an A&R. I don't know if a producer is the right label for him. I think an A&R or even like a refiner is a much better
But he didn't do what like DJ Khaled does. Like someone's doing it and he's like, oh wait, actually I don't really like that snare. Can we try another one? Like he does stuff like that. Or does someone like have an entire song and then like already produced it and then they show him and he's like, no, I don't like this.
No, I think
don't
he'll
like
sit
that.
In on the session and be like, that's just not really working. But like, he even said himself, he's like, I don't really give an answer. I just say that like something doesn't feel right. And then
that's like what I do with you. I'm the Rick Rubin.
Literally. And like, that's fine.
But I say I don't know anything.
He's obviously important enough to have some of the credits on some of those biggest songs that have ever existed.
I don't have credits.
So like, I'm not going to fucking argue with that.
I don't have credits
on
Miranda
your songs. Wants credits for all the times we're in a car and she's like, I don't really like that kick drum.
But like, I'm just kidding.
I don't know. That's just my roundabout way of saying like, not everybody can teach. Not everything is even teachable. Like,
yes, it's true.
I can show somebody exactly how I make a record and they'll never make the same record because they don't have the exact same gear. They don't have the same room. But more importantly, they don't have the same mind and the same taste. Mm-hmm. So unless you're just going to drag and drop everything into a session that I already have the template laid out for, like you're never going to get the same exact result. And that is the beauty of education to me.
Yeah.
Because I went to school to teach English. So I think about music much more on like how you would go through like a literature class than like a math class. I don't think that there is a right and a wrong way to do things.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think that A equals B equals C. I think that in English, I always loved it because you can always persuade somebody that you're right on a subject because it's all about your taste and your opinion.
Thing.
And so like, I don't think that if you read Great Gatsby, you're going to have some people say it's the best book of all time. You're going to have some people say it's the worst book of all time. And most people are going to fall in the middle. I don't think if you can back up why you think it's the worst book of all time, you're valid. If you can back up why you think it's the best book of all time, you're valid. If you can back up what you think the eyes on the sign signify, and it can make sense, you're valid. If you say, I don't even think that that's a simile, I think it's just a spot in the book, this is why, you're valid. And I think that that's music, right? I think that when you're making a song, you need to create that emotion for the listener where they feel like what they've done in this track feels supported by melody, by structure, by performance, by sonic characteristics. And that is what is most important. I don't really care if somebody records a song on an 8-track recorder in a garage and it sounds like dog shit, as long as the vibe is good to me. And that's things that you'll never, ever, ever be able to teach. Like, you can never, ever teach, here's how to make somebody vibe with a record. You just have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like sometimes people comment on YouTube videos and they're like, well, how did you come up with like that melody? Like, why did you pick that snare drum? And it's like, that's kind of something you can't really teach. You just kind of have to go off of what you like, what you
listen
vibe
to a bunch
with.
Of music.
Yeah.
Analyze music.
Yeah. It's like some stuff is just unteachable.
You have it or you don't.
Yeah. It's not people want things to be a formula or to be simple and be easy. But unfortunately, most things are not that way.
And like, I'm kind of grateful for that because music would be really fucking boring.
Oh,
if it was.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Then
it's
all
the problem with like AI music.
I was
and
just
going
to say that all the AI music would actually be good. And
but that's why I'm
shit.
Not as worried about AI is because I don't think about it as like, what snare drum technically fits 200 hertz so it'll thicken up this mix? I'm just going to try 8 and I'm going to pick my favorite one and then I'm going to move on.
Exactly.
Like, in my mind, I'll know when it's right or I'll know when it's wrong or I'll say it's almost there and it needs something. And that just comes off of years and years of experience of learning your tools, figuring out your techniques. But also just listening to music. I'm always listening to music and I'm actively listening. I'll analyze something. I listened to the new McGee record. And to be honest, it's such a cool vibe. Sounds terrible.
You mean like mix-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
But if it was this super, that's the point. It's like this lo-fi, drowned out, reverby, tapey, crunchy. Sounds like you're almost in another room. Sonic characteristic. And I love that because it fits the record, it fits the emotion of the songs, and I vibe with it. If it was a super high produced, sounded like a Troye Sivan record, just with his cool guitar tones and his vocals, I'd be like, this kind of fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need everything to fit the same mix template. I don't need everything to be mastered to the same LUFS. I don't need everything to have the same 6 kick drums or snare drums. I think that music is so boundless, and I think that so many people put these weird boundaries on it, mm-hmm. including educators and teachers.
Yeah.
And that's why we don't do a lot of like mixing content. We don't do a lot of like songwriting content because production, I feel like I can show you what I'm doing and I can explain it better because it's much more step by step. But like with songwriting, I can tell you about rhyme scheme. I can tell you about using, you know, figurative language and similes and metaphors and alliteration and personification. I can do all that. I literally went to school for that. It doesn't matter on a record at the end of the day. Like, nobody really cares. So yeah, we can listen to We Can't Be Friends by Ariana Grande, and I can tell you why I think that the melody is working, but that's just a theory. Yeah. It's working because something in it clicked with millions of people, and now it's a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Where it could have one thing different, one note different, one word different, one syllable different. All of a sudden, it doesn't work.
You know, I just saw a video of Jessie J talking about how she wrote Party in the USA for Miley Cyrus. And she was singing the original lyrics that she wrote when she wrote that song. And I was like, wow, that really would not work if those were the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, it really would not sound as good. And they changed just a few lyrics, just like literally three lyrics, I think, in the time, in the spot that she sang. I don't know about the whole song. But I was like, that changed the entire... I actually just heard that song today, funny enough, on my workout.
On a Peloton workout?
Yeah, so very strange. That's funny. But I was like, that changed that entire vibe of that song.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Literally one word changes everything. Yeah. One melody change changes everything. Mm-hmm. Coming in on a one instead of rushing the one changes everything. Like, you just have to try everything. And you have to trust your gut and trust your instinct. And like, at the end of the day, that's what I tell people. I can teach you whatever. At the end of the day, trust your gut. Like, I'm never going to say what you did is invalid. I can say, oh, if you want my opinion on this, like, I'm not vibing with it. This is what I would personally do. But like, if that's not what you want to do in the record, then don't do it. Like, it's your record at the end of the day. I don't really care what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I like it, cool. And if I don't, that's also fine. Like, not everybody's going to like everything, which we've talked about before.
Yep.
Not everybody is, you know, not everybody's opinion is like entitled to be thrown at everybody all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that the only issue that I do have with people teaching is trying to position things as like, there's a start, there's a middle, there's an end. There's a right and a wrong way to do things.
Yeah.
Or like, this is exactly how you achieve this result.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's boring. I think it's one dimensional. And I think that it might help people in the short term, but I don't think it's going to make somebody a better producer because you tell them when you do a delay throw, you always need to use Echo Boy on this exact setting. That might teach them the fundamentals of what a delay throw does, but after four productions, that's boring, and they're just not going to use that tip anymore. Rather than saying like, hey, here's a delay throw. I'm going to use this setting. If you wanted to get similar ideas, change these parameters around.
Yeah.
Swap this plugin out for repeater or for tape echo or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. That's why our videos are 30 minutes. It's because it's me showing somebody a technique and then spending 3 minutes explaining like, I just showed you what I do. Here's ways for you to do it.
Yeah.
And you can go way beyond those boundaries. And that is my only issue with like YouTube teachers and audio influencers and stuff like that. Like, if you're going to be honest, if you're going to be straight up and show your process, anybody's welcome to do it. I don't care if you have one stream or 100 billion streams. I don't care if you're Serban or if you're John from down the street. It really doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. That's just my whole opinion on it. I don't think that those who can't do teach.
No.
I think that sometimes that's the case, but sometimes that's all the case with anything. Like,
yeah, and sometimes the inverse is true as well.
Yeah. Sometimes an actor can't act. They're just a nepotism baby.
But yeah, it's
that
true.
Doesn't mean that anybody that has famous parents is not also a good actor.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't sit here and say like, Maya Hawke is Ethan Hawke's daughter. And that's the only reason that she's in Stranger. She's great in that
show. She's a great actress. Yeah.
The nepotism might've got her in the room, but like at the end of the day, I think she deserves that spot.
Yeah.
Does she deserve it more than somebody that didn't have connections? I don't know because I wasn't in the casting room, but I don't think that you get to say that like, just because you saw one nepotism actor or actress that was like terrible at their job that obviously got there through that, that anybody who's a nepotism child is like unvalid. And it's the same thing with teaching. Just because somebody's teaching, you don't get to automatically say that they were unsuccessful in their career.
Right.
And my last point is that like, you'll never, ever know. Like, unless you know every producer to make every song ever, you'll never know. Sometimes somebody will follow me and I won't know who they are, but it'll be like, oh, we have some mutuals. And I looked them up, 4 billion streams.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck? And other times people come in acting like a hotshot and I looked them up and they're like 340 streams.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is, you don't know who's made what records. Like, unless you're just studying credits and you're like a savant that has an encyclopedia of that knowledge in your head.
You still would never know because there's so many, there's so much music.
Yeah.
So much music. And every single one of those had to be produced by somebody.
Yeah.
And you're not going to know every single person who's produced every single song.
If I were to sit here and say, oh, lately I've been listening to a lot of, or like, what if I was like, I just saw a cool tutorial on how to mix rock drums from a guy named Jordan Schmidt. And you'd be like, who the fuck is Jordan Schmidt? I've never heard of them. They don't have a big online presence. He has like 1,000 followers on Instagram. Can't really find much about him. Why would I listen to him? He does all the Ban Camino records. Yeah. Has forever.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's not Max Martin or Serban or Elangelo or Ian Kirkpatrick or somebody who's like a top 10 producer or mixer, you don't get to just write them off because you don't know who they are. He's still huge.
Mm-hmm.
You might not know who Andrew Goldstein is. He's got 6 billion streams. Like, yeah. It's fine. And that's my thing. I don't have that. I'm at like a few hundred million, but...
Oh, just a few hundred million.
I'm proud of my career. I have no problem with like saying what I've done and what I haven't done. But that's the point of like, when we made a group and when we started making content, I've always positioned it as like, I just want people to know who I am and what I've done. I can show you how to make an Ariana Grande record stylistically, but I'm never going to say like, this is how you make a record for I've never made a record for Ariana Grande. Right. I can say these are techniques that were used in her record. Here's how you can make something that sounds like her, but more importantly, how to implement that into your own production.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, this is how you make a song for Ariana Grande.
No, that's crazy. Also, a lot of that is luck. It's not all skill. A lot of it is skill. But also a lot of it is luck.
Yeah, but do you have any closing points?
I don't think I have any closing points. Maybe just think before you leave comments on people's stuff.
Yeah.
Being rude. And
I think just be open to learning.
Yeah. Like, and stop bullying people who teach.
Yeah, I don't think anybody that listens to this podcast is like that. Because obviously you're listening to an hour-long podcast of two nobodies in the industry yapping.
So, I'm not even in the industry.
Literally. But like, if you see that sentiment, I think just try to implore people that like, there's so many cool tips and tricks and information to learn from people who of all walks of life, right? Like,
yeah.
Some of my favorite production tips I've ever learned were from people who I would never hire them to make my record, but it was a very cool trick that I can utilize in my own workflow. And that's such a beautiful thing, because everything gets really boring if we only allow the top 1% of 1% to be the ones that make all the records and then teach people how to make all the records.
Yeah, everything's going to sound the same.
Boring.
Yeah. You got to stay open-minded, be nicer to people who teach.
And try to be a good learner.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop just taking things at face value and like analyze what you're learning.
I think that is very interesting. People will take things very like literally almost, where they're like, okay, that's how I use the compressor. That's how I have to use the compressor every single time. And it's like, no, you can manipulate things to how it works with you. Like, sure, you can learn how to do something, but then you need to figure out how that works in your workflow. You don't have to like watch our tutorials and then do exactly what Austin does. And because that's Austin's workflow, that's not your workflow. Doesn't mean that you need to do everything that he does, because what he does might not work with your setup.
Yeah, maybe you didn't want to make a super clean pop record. Maybe you want to make something that's crazier. So if I'm showing you how to use tape saturation and I'm using it very gently, and then you're sitting there trying to make a record that sounds like Olivia Rodrigo, and you're like, why does it not sound the same as when he used it on a Billie Eilish record? And it's like, because you're not driving it nearly hard enough.
Yeah. Also, everyone's brain is so different. Like, the way that your brain works is not obviously, no one's brain works exactly the same. So the way that you learn or process information or create is going to be differently than the next person or the person that you're learning from or teaching.
Right.
And that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing points?
It's more fun. I just think it's more fun to like learn. There's a big saying that's like very famous, and it's like, learn rules so then you know how to break them.
Right.
And like, that's production to me. Like, learn how a compressor works, learn basics and fundamentals and techniques before you go trying to do crazy shit.
Yeah.
But then you get to understand like, oh, that preamp now sounds crunchy because I've exceeded the gain threshold and it's clipping the converters on it. And like, maybe that's the sound that I want. Where technically, if you were to watch 9 out of 10 tutorials on how to use a preamp, they'd be like, don't clip a converter. Yeah. Do not do it. Where it's like, if that's the sound you want, then that's the sound you want. I'm not going to sit there and tell you that's not valid.
Yeah. I feel like we talked with that when, forever ago when Platinum was on the
Podcast. He was like, most of the shit I do in my studio would make other producers roll their eyes.
Or a lot of it can be like happy accidents that you like don't mean to do it, and then you do and you're like, oh shit, that actually turned out really cool.
Yeah, I'm working on a video right now about like why I'm using pedals in my studio, and it is specifically to have happy accidents and to get fucked up sounds that like you're just not gonna get in the DAW, because DAW is the issue that I have with them is that they're so perfect all the time that sometimes it doesn't allow you to like accidentally fuck things up where that becomes a really cool moment in the record.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm switching to more analog gear. I'm not switching to analog gear because it sounds monumentally better than a plug-in. I'm switching to it because I like being dexterous. I like happy accidents. I like that character. And sometimes that is hard to replicate in a plug-in, not just the sound.
Yeah. And I think it can make you, it like, feel like you used a different part of your brain
100%.
When you're, you know, physically playing an instrument than on the computer.
Could I get the exact sound from that Juno 106 and Arturia? Yes. I'm not going to go about that the same way, so I'm not going to get the same sound.
Exactly,
though.
Yeah.
But that's really all I have. Before we go, we'll do some recommendations.
Oh, shoot.
So while Miranda's thinking of hers, I'm going to go and let you guys know about a new app that friend of the channel, Mick Schultz, actually just dropped. And it is called Tracklist. It's T-R-A-K-L-I-S-T. And it's an app that you can have on your phone. You can download it from your app store or Android Marketplace or whatever. And there is a desktop website. And what's really cool about Tracklist, this is not a sponsor. I paid for the year subscription with my own money, by the way. I probably could have gotten it from Mick. I got to beta test it, but it was so fire I had to buy it and support. This app, I swear to God, is something that I wish I had my entire career. You can basically load your files on there from the desktop version or from your phone, like where you have your files. And you can stream things in full quality on the go. So like Dropbox sounds terrible when you use it. Like the Dropbox player is almost never in full res. It sounds really, really bad. So not only does Tracklist allow you to listen to the music when you're in the car or on a home speaker or whatever, it has this feature that to me is a lifesaver, and it's AB function. So I can upload two versions of the same mix. So I can do Nightbreaker's master from June 5th, Nightbreaker's master from June 7th. And you can A-B them and you can swap them in real time. There's no clicks or pops. There's no like dead space or silence. And it gives you analytics. Like it'll tell you the integrated LUFS. It'll tell you the true peak value and the momentary LUFS. So you can see which mix is louder, which mix is hitting harder, which mix do I like the sound of better. And it is the first A or B app that I've ever found that I can use on my phone that is actually like fantastic. So if you're ever looking to A-B test your songs that you have or your songs with reference songs or whatever, Tracklist really is like the only option that I could recommend for
it
that.
It really is really cool.
Like even Miranda was like, holy shit. Like there's no, like she didn't know I was even swapping between versions because that's how seamless it
is. Yeah. Normally it like will click a little bit. You know what I mean?
Or to like drop out for like a microsecond.
Yeah. Like very, very subtle in your toy. You're like, whatever. I don't really care that it does that. This doesn't do that at all.
It's so impressive.
It's
I don't
really
know,
impressive.
I think Mick and his team worked on it for like 3 or 4 years. So I'm sure they have some codecs in there getting shit to run smooth. But like Mick, if you listen to this or whatever, y'all made a crazy, crazy app. And I think that
it looks nice too.
It's $6. So they have a free version that you can have like up to 25 files on it at once. So if you just need it to A-B test and then you delete stuff, use the free version. Then they have it to where you get like 6,000 files on it. And that's $6 a month or $50 for the year. So I just bought the first year. I will say it would be cool if they integrate a version to where you can send it to your clients, because right now you can only listen natively on your app. But if I could send it to clients to where I send them an A-B and they could listen on the app, that would be super, super
sick. Can they not listen on the website?
Like a replacement for Dropbox? No, because it's not like a replacement for Dropbox to send out.
Yeah.
It's like a replacement for Dropbox for like me to reference later.
Got it.
But it would be cool if there was a send out function to where like they could access their files.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my only critique. That app is so, so good. So go check out Tracklist. Mick, if you're watching this, great work on that. I'll let you go.
Yeah, sorry guys, I don't have a rec. I can't think of anything. My rec is to go drink water or something.
Perfect.
My self-care rec I always give, so.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it. We talked about a lot on this podcast. Let us know in the comments or on Instagram or wherever you're listening to this. What do you want to see? We're always looking to get content
running out of ideas, guys.
From you guys. So we're down to talk about whatever, music-related, business-related, life-related. Just let us know what you want us to talk about and we'll do an episode on that. But other than that, that's going to do it for this episode. Make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us wherever you're listening to this. Follow us on Instagram at Make Pop Music and check out our website, makepopmusic.com. And then other than that, I guess we'll see you guys in a couple weeks. But as for now, much love, peace.